Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest plans to nominate U.S. Attorney Thomas Kirch II to the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals if Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed to the Supreme Court. The ACLU is suing the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Jerry Davidge of the Post Tribune about his latest column featuring an interesting experiment he conducted at local political campaign rallies in the region. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. President Donald Trump intends to nominate a Northwestern Indiana federal prosecutor to the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals if Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court. The White House announced Wednesday that Trump plans to nominate U.S. Attorney Thomas Kirch II, who was appointed to the Northern District of Indiana in 2017. Barrett is expected to be confirmed by the Senate within the next week. As U.S. Attorney, Kirch has concentrated on prosecuting drug as well as gang-related crimes.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The Gary Community School Corporation announced earlier this week that the number of students attending its schools increased for the first time in more than 10 years, as measured by the average daily membership count report it submits to the State Department of Education. The increase in attendance for Gary schools is in contrast to other school districts in the area and Indiana. Manager Dr. Paige McNulty shared the latest enrollment numbers at the State Distressed Unit Appeals Board meeting. McNulty says the improved attendance increases are also in contrast to the years before MGT Consulting took over management of the Gary schools 3 years ago. MGT initiated a 2-year plan for continuing to improve academics, engagement, fiscal matters, and operations in the district. GCSC also adopted local preference policies for hiring and purchasing.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana is one of several states seeing a new wave of COVID cases, with some counties getting hit harder than others. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains, the rising numbers are creating additional challenges for schools struggling to stay open.
Finding people to do things like drive buses, prepare meals, and lead classrooms gets tricky when a lot of people have to quarantine or get sick. In Fountain County, Covington Schools Superintendent Kevin Smith says no major disruptions had occurred this fall until his schools were suddenly forced to go back to remote learning earlier this month.
You know, there's just a whole lot of uncertainty that really makes our decision-making, quite honestly, more so than ever, at least in my career experiences, moment by moment.
Rising cases in several counties is forcing leaders like Smith to abruptly adjust their operating plans, but there's little to no evidence schools are causing more outbreaks. Indiana broke a grim record just last week, reporting more than 2,000 new cases in a single day. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Governor Eric Holcomb announced Wednesday the state will devote significant resources to nursing homes across Indiana in the next few weeks. COVID cases and deaths are surging in nursing homes as the state's infection rate spikes. To respond, Holcomb says he will deploy the Indiana National Guard and members of the state's healthcare reserve workforce to help staff those facilities.
We're going to be sending a lot of additional PPE, N95 masks and gowns and face shields, kind of surgically meeting that surge with our surge of our own.
Dr. Lindsay Weaver of the Indiana Department of Health says the state will also help further educate nursing home staff about best practices for reducing spread of the virus.
We will hire clinical staff from the healthcare reserve workforce to allow all long-term care facilities to be visited at least 3 times a week.
Nursing homes account for more than half of Indiana's COVID-19 deaths.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Hoosiers facing eviction and in need of help of paying their rent can once again get assistance from the state. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the state, using federal COVID relief dollars, reopened its rental assistance program Tuesday.
The state's latest rental assistance program provides some money for 6 months for Hoosiers who've lost income during the pandemic. There are several criteria people must meet to be eligible. For instance, you can't be getting rental help from another source. Your landlord must agree to participate in the program. You also have to be making less than a certain amount of income depending on where you live, anywhere from about $33,000 to $43,000 a year for a family of four. The state will prioritize money for people who've had a notice to vacate or notice of eviction filed against them. Hoosiers can apply at IndianaHousingNow.org. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The ACLU is suing the Federal Bureau of Prisons, asking a judge to compel the agency to release records related to COVID-19 within its prisons. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Adam Pinsker reports.
The American Civil Liberties Union is accusing the Justice Department of withholding agency records detailing the spread of the coronavirus in federal prisons. The ACLU says the DOJ has ignored several records requests under the Freedom of Information Act. To date, 127 federal inmates have died from COVID-19, including two with the prison complex in Terre Haute. Thousands more have been infected. In June, Bureau of Prisons Director Michael Carvajal testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee about the challenge the virus is posing to the prison system.
Prisons by nature aren't made for social distancing, and we have to find creative ways to do that. One of the other challenges we face is that staff have to work in these facilities and they go and come.
The Bureau of Prisons has referred any media requesting comment to a 9-phase pandemic response plan posted on its website. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Adam Pinsker.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Voter turnout among young people is lower than other age groups and compared to the national average, even lower in Indiana. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains there's an ongoing effort to change that by showing kids how to get involved and why it's important.
Voter turnout among young people is lower than other age groups, and compared to the national average, even lower in Indiana. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay explains there's an ongoing effort to change that by showing kids how to get involved and why it's important.
It's called the Indiana Kids Election. Attorneys visit classrooms across the state and provide teachers with online lesson plans and materials focused on elections. Then, students of all ages cast a mock ballot on Election Day, voting for president, governor, and attorney general. Director of Civic Education for the Indiana Bar Foundation, Tim Colgreen, says it's critical to get students involved so they're more likely to become lifelong voters.
Voting is important. It's the way citizens really get to tell their government how they want things to work.
According to national data, voter turnout for young people in Indiana hit 35% in 2016, 3 points below the national average. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Democratic candidate for Indiana governor is trying to spur support in the last days of the campaign by highlighting the state school's superintendent position that isn't being decided by voters for the first time in more than a century. Woody Myers, a physician and former state health commissioner who is challenging Republican Governor Eric Holcomb's re-election bid, plans to appoint current Superintendent of Public Education Jennifer McCormick to lead the state's education department if he's elected as governor. McCormick previously announced that she would not seek a second term, but said Thursday she switched her position to ensure continuity within the state's education department.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. With just weeks to the election, the Indiana Democratic Party has teamed up with doctors to share stories about the impact the Affordable Care Act, or ACA, has had on Hoosiers. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barbara Angiano reports the partnership aims to rally support for the ACA as it heads to the Supreme Court shortly after the election.
The Indiana Democratic Party worries about the repeal of the ACA. That's why they staged a day-long conference via Zoom recently. Dr. Vidya Kaura was one of the speakers and says he's seen great improvement in preventative care since Hoosiers gained access to the Healthy Indiana Plan, or HIP 2.0. Before then, he says some of his diabetic patients put off care.
But because of the availability of insurance, they were able to come and see physicians. They were able to get to their dietitians. They were able to buy medications, including insulin, as most of you know, is quite expensive.
The doctors at the event champion the ACA because they say it has helped millions of Hoosiers gain access to health insurance. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barbara Angiano.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Three of Central Indiana's largest health systems want people to know racism is a public health crisis, and it's preventable. They say they want to go on record in pledging to do more to end health disparities and other inequities. The leaders say poverty, inadequate housing, food deserts, and joblessness worsen the health of Black and Latinx communities, and they list a series of goals to achieve over time. Among them, livable wages for workers and more people of color in the ranks of hospital leaders.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
According to an Associated Press report, teacher retirements are increasing around the country, including Indiana. Some educators are afraid to go back into the classroom because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Adam Pinsker spoke with a teacher who called it quits just a few years shy of retirement.
Instead of teaching world history or ethnic studies at Bloomington North High School, Steve Philbeck is relaxing at Upper Cascade Park on a recent Wednesday afternoon.
I miss it terribly.
Philbeck taught at North for 24 years, but left his position just a few years short of retirement because of concerns about the COVID-19 virus. The Monroe County School Corporation started the school year online, but within a few weeks transitioned into in-person learning. But Philbeck wasn't ready to go back.
Hold no grudges about it. I mean, people are trying to do what they think is best for them and for our community, and I'll assume that that's what they're doing and we move forward, but they're going to have to move forward without me.
At 65 years old, Philbeck says he feels great. However, he's worried that being around children who may not immediately show signs of having the coronavirus may put him at risk.
We have this thing in education where we always say, you know, you take the safest route. And to me, it just seemed like we needed to wait till January. Let's do a semester online.
The numbers that were offered during public comment, which is that...
During a school board meeting last month, Monroe County Assistant Superintendent Andrea Mobley said 72 teachers have resigned or retired between last school year and the beginning of this school year. That's up slightly from 70 teacher departures the year before.
We've had one retiree since in-person instruction started this year. And then we've had eight others that have moved or resigned for various reasons to go to other school corporations One person was military.
A Department of Education spokesperson says the agency isn't tracking data on how many teachers have resigned or retired since the district statewide have returned to the classroom. Indiana State Teachers Association Vice President Jennifer Smith Margraf says the added stress of having to teach students during the COVID-19 pandemic is making life hard for teachers.
We have reports from around the state that a lot of teachers in classrooms are being asked to do double duty. So they're being asked to teach face-to-face all day. And then they also have a group of students who are learning virtually.
Smith Margraf says there was already a teacher shortage, but COVID has exacerbated the problem. She says it can be next to impossible to find substitutes.
We are hearing that there are pretty significant substitute shortages across the state, which is only going to continue if we have the flu season like we did last year.
The Monroe County School Corporation established a metric committee to set specific COVID-19 thresholds for school closures.
Hello, welcome to 84 Feet with Phil Beck. This is
Phil Beck says outside the classroom, he enjoyed getting to know his students through a YouTube feature he did called 84 Feet with Phil Beck, where he walked the length of a basketball court while interviewing a student. He'll miss the relationships he formed in and out of the classroom.
Like, I love teaching my classes, and I dearly loved being in that school building, and I love Bloomington North High School.
The day he announced his retirement, Phil Beck says he was almost brought to tears by the hundreds of well wishes he got on his Facebook page. Many of his friends and former students say they were shocked and saddened by his departure.
Things don't always go the way you planned, and sometimes you have tough decisions to make, and ultimately, when it comes down to it, you know, at some point you make the best decision for you.
For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Adam Pinsker.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Post Tribune columnist Jerry Davich.
Let's talk to Jerry Davich. He's a columnist for the Post Tribune, and he's put out a politically charged column, I guess you could say. Certainly it deals with politics, and Jerry has had an opportunity to try on T-shirts, one from each political party in the presidential race. And Jerry, first of all, thanks for joining us on the program today.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Well, the column that I'm sure that's probably caused the most interest, in, at least in recent columns, not the only one, but in recent columns at least, is one where you tried out Donald Trump and Joe Biden T-shirts in public for 1 month. Tell us about the idea for the column, in turn actually about wearing the T-shirts, and what kind of reactions that you got from people who saw you.
Yeah, I initially purchased the T-shirt online because I couldn't find a local store that sold both of them. And the idea was just to wear each shirt. One says Biden-Harris 2020. The other one says Trump-Pence. I think Make America Great. Mm-hmm. Just wear these shirts in public, see the reaction from people. I didn't really have to engage with people specifically. I wasn't trying to instigate anything. I just wanted to see what people reacted to me if I didn't say anything. And, of course, the reactions were very different. Not as much as I expected, I guess, but it was different, though. A lot of Trump supporters were very complimentary, very praising of me wearing this Trump shirt in public. They would either tell me verbally, they would praise me verbally, or they would kind of give me the old wink and nod, or a silent nod, or a thumbs up. I got a lot of thumbs up kind of thing. I didn't get the same responses with the Biden shirt, so to speak. On last Saturday, during the Freedom Rally in downtown Valparaiso, I brought both the shirts there because everything's going to be kind of politically charged, obviously. It was actually a pro-Trump rally in downtown for 3 hours. I was there beforehand and a little bit during, and I wore the shirts beforehand. And that's the kind of responses I got, was it kind of illustrated the same responses I was getting for the past month or so, off and on, when I wear these shirts.
Mm-hmm. When you were there at the Freedom Rally, did you get any specific comments? Like you said, you got a lot of wink and nods, I would imagine, or at least some silent recognition of the fact that you were wearing a T-shirt for a certain party. What specifically did anybody tell you?
Well, as soon as I got out of the car, even before I got my mask on to go to this downtown park, Central Park Plaza, two guys walked past me with a GOP shirt, Trump shirt, and they're very vocal about it. Hey, love the shirt. Nice job. Good going. We're proud. You know, that kind of thing. And so it was very vocal, of course. I didn't get the same responses with the Biden shirt one way or another, even in the past month or so. So without a doubt, the Trump shirt caused more reaction. It either encouraged people to say something to me, or it encouraged people to go away from me. I know I lost some just normal conversations I would typically have during my errands or my work day or whatever, and people purposely avoided me or didn't look me in the eye or did not want to really have a conversation with me because of that.
I understand that as far as the course, you got the response from the Republicans for that particular rally, but how about for the Democrats in Northwest Indiana that encountered you with the T-shirt on?
Yeah, no one wanted me to see that, to have that T-shirt on. A lot of people said early on, even when I put this idea out on social media, that, oh, don't wear that shirt in public. That'll cause you problems. You can get beat up. You can get hurt. You can get harmed. None of that actually took place, although I could have wore it in more dangerous spots of the country or the region, obviously, and I did not.
Mm-hmm.
But, a lot of Democrats, I think, were just more quiet about things all the way around. All they did warn me, and a lot of them said there was no way you could not even pay them money to wear a Trump shirt in public, no matter how much money.
Oh, my goodness. I know that your column mentions one attendee in particular, Chadwick Bukur, if I'm pronouncing Chadwick's name properly, who mentions about, some thoughts that you've got from him on Facebook. Tell us a little bit more about what he had to say and about the support for the Donald Trump campaign.
Without a doubt, there was a lot of Trump supporters there, obviously, at the rally. A lot of them were upset with me. They thought I mischaracterized the rally. I went there beforehand and shot some video, posted it on my Facebook pages, and it showed that there was, nobody there yet. And then I circled back a couple hours later in the middle of the rally, took some more video and showed that there were people there. Some of the people who were there thought I was mischaracterizing it by not showing the video of enough people there, or the more crowded spots of the park, which I thought was wrong. And then one of the people I heard from was this Chadwick, who commented on my Facebook page. He said, support for Trump is authentic, organic, and crosses social, racial, and cultural divides. The truth is, we see through it. More and more people daily are waking up and seeing through it, the false left-right divide and conquer BS.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that represented with a lot of Trump supporters that told me through the months, through the weeks, and of course on Saturday. So I wanted to put it in my column. I was trying to give also a voice to Trump supporters as well as Biden supporters.
We're talking with Post Tribune columnist Jerry Davich about the one particular column that he had in the newspapers, in print and online. This is about the time that he had gotten the campaign T-shirts for both the Biden-Harris campaign and for the Donald Trump campaign. And you mentioned that in the column that you'd never done this before, not wearing any shirts or any hats or any buttons for political campaigns, candidates locally or nationally. And this is probably the first and last time you're going to do this. That's still your feeling?
Without a doubt. I've never wore campaign shirts, buttons, hats, nothing. I'm a Chicago Bears fan for 50 years. I don't even wear a Chicago Bears jersey. I just don't wear things like that, especially politically speaking. I don't need the extra, interrogation or scrutiny or whatever by a shirt. It defines us way too much. And I think there's more a gray area to talk about with politics instead of the black and white, instead of Trump versus Biden. There's a lot of complex issues in between. I'd rather talk with somebody. So, no, I've never worn the shirts before. I still have them in my closet. I don't think I'll wear them again unless it's for a follow-up to this column to wear it in specific spots that might illustrate a more dimensional for another column.
Mm-hmm. Now, so as you mentioned, you've had some comments already on your Facebook page about this. What other comments besides the one we've just heard from Chadwick Bukur about that have you received so far, not only about the act that you accomplished with wearing the T-shirts, but also the column that you wrote about it?
Yeah, well, I've heard from a lot of people who commented on both of my Facebook pages. I have one called Talking Points, which is more of a professional Facebook page. And on that page specifically, a lot of readers and sources have commented that they thought I should not have done it. Either I was making a mockery of democracy, so to speak, or the system itself. And other people were just interested more than anything. It's kind of a sociological experiment is what all it was. And I was curious of the reactions, and obviously there are reactions. And it wasn't only just from people in Northwest Indiana. I've heard from people, because the Post Tribune is owned by Chicago Tribune Media, so a lot of Chicago Tribune readers have contacted me the past couple of days. And then I've heard from people across the country who really never saw anything like this, and they were just curious how the results turned out, whether they agree with it or not. As one reader told me yesterday with a tweet, I believe, through Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
She said she appreciates that I really didn't tip my hand if I'm a Trump voter or a Biden voter, at least not in this column specifically. So she appreciated that. I just put it out there as an experiment, and she was happy with the results.
There's one final paragraph I'd like you to talk about, Jerry. In fact, it's the last paragraph in the column itself, talking about people wanting to belong to something. And that's definitely human nature, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of my columns circle back to this bigger picture, this broader aspect of humanity. And, of course, it really focuses on politics as well. But people want to believe, I mean, they want to believe in something, want to belong to something. And what I wrote, they want to belong to either a political party, a social movement, or what they believe is the right side of history. And as you know, with Trump and Biden supporters, Democrats and Republicans, they are convinced they are siding with the right side of history. So I think a lot of this boils down to people wanting a sense of belonging. And at that rally, I got that same impression again. Every rally I go to, I covered the Obama when he was voted as president. I was at Grant Park that night when he was accepting. And that feeling there, people wanted to belong to that movement, just like people want to belong to this Trump movement that took place last Saturday. They want to belong.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jerry, thank you very much for talking about your column that you had in the Post-Tribune about wearing the Biden T-shirt and the Trump T-shirt and the reaction that you got not only at the time that you wore them, but also later that you got on your Facebook pages. Thanks for talking about it today.
My pleasure. Thanks for the consideration.
You're welcome. That's Post-Tribune columnist Jerry Davich.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.